reading any sermons out of it, but they do have some good noteworthy news. Okay, Baptist Church in Hood River, Oregon, put on their sign, "Allah is not our God." People got all upset. Does anybody remember when I put that out here? All I put was, "Allah is not America's God." That was it, which is true. So this guy got harassed, and the mayor said this, "I am annoyed that in this political season there's a solid case of ugly going on. I think it's norms up this kind of behavior like, oh, it's okay to be a bigot now." That's politically correct. So let's look at the Muslims that the media will not tell us about. A Muslim mob torched and looted the homes of 80 Christian families in Egypt because they were converting a building to a church. And the Muslims were chanting, "By no means shall there be a church here." They burned down, destroyed all the construction materials and injured the people involved, and then looted and torched all the Christian homes and properties in the surrounding area. Media's not going to report that, are they? Okay, how about this one? A 7-year-old boy went to school every day, and his mom would write little notes in his lunchbox, and she usually gave a Bible verse at school when he was in school. And as he would, read the little Bible verses, some of his little buddies would start reading the verses with him, and they were getting excited about it. And so the daily note for her son turned into an expectation by the other children during lunch, who excitedly begged him to see the notes. Soon the Bible verses turned to Bible stories. But one little girl said, "Teacher, this is the most beautiful story I've ever seen." The teacher responded with, "Separation of church and state. The notes are banned from lunchtime distribution." So they told the 7-year-old boy that the school gate was the only location at which he could give the Bible verses to his friends, and only after the bell rang. His mother wrote to school to correct this misinformation, but the only response was that the little boy was reprimanded again in front of the whole class, and again told to stop talking about religion or sharing his mother's notes. The ban was then expanded by the principal, who demanded that the little fella only hand out the notes on public sidewalk far from the exit off the school property. And then later that day, a Los Angeles deputy sheriff knocked at the door of the little boy's house, demanding the little boy's note sharing to cease altogether, because somebody might be offended. That's where we're at in America. So, okay, Lamentations. We're in Lamentations chapter 4. And let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us to understand your words. Help us to see that the reason why Israel went through this destruction and they were conquered by another nation is because the people were offended about the Bible. And Lord, I pray you would have mercy in our country, that these people claim to desire free speech, but that's with the exception that you can't talk about Jesus. And I pray that you'd have mercy in our country, forgive the nation. I pray that you'd help us to be faithful to you. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Saturday we're going to go down to Purdue. The freshmen have come back. And so we'll try to meet at the Rensselaer Church at 5. And so if you are able to do that, you're more than welcome. Okay, Lamentations 4. Okay, remember this historically is writing about Israel being conquered by Babylon. Doctrinally, it's writing about Israel who will be conquered by the Antichrist during the tribulation time period. Okay, so verse 1, Jeremiah is lamenting, and he says, how has the gold become dim? How has the most fine gold changed? The stones of the sanctuary are poured out in the top of every street. Okay, when we see the word gold, we obviously immediately think of the precious metal. In this context, it might not be the gold, the precious metal in itself. It might be the lack of faith of the Jewish people because they're being tried. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 7 says that the trial of your faith is much more precious than gold. Okay, now, practically speaking, yes, you could see in verse 1 that the money, if you're going to take it literal, the money has gone bad, okay? And in our society, the money goes bad anytime the banks want it to go bad, okay? It's not a matter of the metal at all. It's just a matter of confidence or lack thereof. Okay, the stones of the sanctuary, that was predicted for the temple in the tribulation by the Lord Jesus when he said in John 13 that every stone here is going to be torn down. And that was historically taken down in 70 AD, but doctrinally it will be a tribulation time period. Verse 2, the precious sons of Zion, comparable to fine gold. So there's where you could say that the gold is dealing with people, of verse 1. How are they esteemed as earthen pitchers, the work of the hands of the potter? On a cross-reference in Isaiah, earthen pitchers, meaning that somebody as a potter can be working on the pottery or on the clay, and if something is marred in the clay, then he either has to start all over, take the marred part out, the bad part out, and then take it again, or he just throws it away. Okay, in this context, he's dealing with the sons of Zion, so the children of Israel, young people of Israel, and he's telling us that, amazingly, they're being thrown away, they're being cast aside. Verse 3, even the sea monsters draw out the breath, they give suck to their young ones. Analogy? Okay, now sea monsters, that would be whales. That's a mammal. That's what scientists put whales and dolphins in the mammal classification because they give suck to their young ones. Okay, like mammals do, but the Bible classifies a whale in the fish family. And it's an unusual type of fish. Okay, and in Genesis 1:21, God created great whales. Now, why would God mention that one particular animal? He mentions species. He mentions fowls. He mentions cattle. There's one particular animal. Creeping things, beasts of the earth, okay, but he mentions a whale. Why does he mention a whale? It's because that's God's joke on the evolutionist. Okay, because the evolutionist says we came as a result of a big bang. Of course, he doesn't know what banged, but we came as a result of big bang. We came out of this puddle. It came out to be a tadpole. Once I was a tadpole when I began. Now I'm a frog with my tail tucked in. Next time, monkey hanging from a banyan pea, now I'm a scientist with a PhD. So you just keep going down that realm, okay? And so they went from a fish to a land creature, okay? So the whale went from a fish to a land creature and then backslid back into the water. And how many whales drowned before they figured out they had lungs rather than gills? When Brent was a little baby, a little infant, he developed a little, what we thought was a cyst right here, and a little bump. And we just had a doctor said, oh, we can just take a slit, a little cut and pull that out. And so he did. And later on, we asked him, what was it? He said it was the gills left over when he was in the womb. I thought he was kidding, but the guy, he never batted an eye. And we just, are you serious? That's a new one. I didn't get my gills cut out, so I probably can swim underwater still. I don't know. Brent can't swim underwater. But I thought, are you serious? Okay, and so he, in Lamentations, the writer, Jeremiah, knew about sea monsters. They call him a monster. Obviously, if you're by a boat and a great big whale comes up and pushes a boat, that is a monster. But the analogy is very clear that even the animals are going to give suck to their children. They're going to nourish their children. But in this time period, the mothers are so much in distress, they don't take care of their kids. They're helpless. They're without hope. Okay, and then he says this, the daughter of thy people has become cruel like the ostriches in the wilderness. So if you study an ostrich, you see that they don't sit on their eggs, they step on them, and they don't take care of their young. And so he's saying this is what people are going to do. And of course, when people are under great stress, when they're under the pressure of society, you know, they react and hurt people, usually almost always hurt other people. And it's like a vicious cycle. So in verse 3, this idea of this sea monster or this whale, and it is a whale that Jonah did not swallow. That swallowed Jonah. That's a trick I always play to kids in our Bible stories. How many of you believe that Jonah swallowed a whale? You know, usually get them on that one. And then people say, well, a whale can't swallow a man. How do you know? Have you ever looked at one? You ever studied it? Have you ever realized that it's happened before? And again, after Jonah? Of course a whale can swallow a man. But in Matthew 12, in the book of Jonah, it keeps saying fish. But in Matthew 12, Jesus said, as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the whale. So we'll take the Lord's comment on that. So that's an unusual fish. And several years ago, I was teaching about Jonah, and I was going through Jonah chapter 2, and it mentions that, when you read Jonah 2, it says that his soul went to hell. So he's in the belly of the whale. His body was in the belly of the whale, but Jonah 2 says his soul went to hell. And I was just teaching that, and it's like, you know, and we had a family that was starting to attend Rensselaer for about 3-4 months. He was a Hiles Anderson graduate, or close thereof. And when I said about Jonah dying and going to hell, I could see that he immediately got talking to, and I thought, oh boy, here we go. We're going to see something here. He learned something that he didn't see before. And so he raised his hand and was going to try to prove it wrong. And he said, well, I thought it was like Jesus in a sepulcher. And I said, yes, thank you very much for the illustration. His body was in the sepulcher and his soul went to hell. Appreciate that analogy you gave me. Of course, he was trying to prove it wrong and I just played dumb. And boy, I could see that they were all upset about that. And I just said, hey, folks, you want to believe it? Believe it, you don't, fine, I don't care. That was after Sunday school. Right during, between Sunday school and church, I watched the whole family go in this back room, and they're praying, and they walked out the door and never came back. Because you learned something. How? I didn't know this. You know, and the funny thing to me is okay, you didn't know that, or I don't agree with that. So you're going to throw the whole baby out with the bathwater because you didn't agree with one thing? That's what a Pharisee does. Your list didn't match my list, and my list is more holy than your list. And I would hope that a believer, you know, that's like a little kid in a nursery that's got 15 toys around and another little kid wants one toy, and they won't give it up. That's that attitude. And God save us from an attitude like that. God give us some maturity to recognize we're not going to agree 100% of the time. Okay, and so the thing is, hey, I'm going to look at the Bible, see what it says. If I don't agree with that, so what? Okay, but in verse 3, he's given an analogy of animals taking care of their young, but Israel's so distressed, the mothers are not taking care of their children. In verse 4, he said, the tongue of the sucking child cleaveth to the roof of his mouth for thirst. The young children ask bread, and no man breaketh it unto them. Kids are starving to death. They that did feed delicately are desolate in the streets. Okay, so that's the rich. They feed delicately. They have the rich foods. So these people were the rich kids growing up, but now reality has set in. They're desolate in the streets. Why? Because they're starving to death. They that were brought up in scarlet, okay, so they've been dressed in, James says, gay apparel. Jesus said, soft apparel. So those that are brought up in scarlet embrace dunghills. Looking for mushrooms, I guess. I don't know if they're going to eat them or snort them. Okay, but they're trying to get out of, they're trying to get out of this. Okay, so these are the rich kids that reality has... Oh, you talk about a tough way for reality set in. You know, a lot of times the city folk, you know, they make fun of us country folk. You know, we're dumb thumps and everything. But when it comes time for starvation, they got to depend on a grocery store that has stock for the maximum of 3 days. And once there's a shortage, it's gone in 3 hours. Okay, and so people in America have become accustomed to that, and they don't realize that if the semis stop running, we are at a 3-day food supply. And a lot of them people in them cities, boy, you talk about rioting. America used to be, you know, an agricultural society where people geared up for a year at a time. But America has ceased to be that way. And that makes us very vulnerable. You know, the one thing about, you know, jokingly about Y2K and the preparation that was done, that taught us a lot of lessons. How weak we are. How vulnerable we are. Okay, and so in this context, in verse 5, you got the rich kids starving to death. Verse 6, it says, for the punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people. Okay, remember, what was their sin? Is that they rejected the word of God. They did exactly what this police officer is telling this little 7-year-old kid. Exactly what the principal is telling this little 7-year-old kid. You can't do that here. Okay, he says, for the punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people is greater than the punishment of the sin of Sodom. That was overthrown as in a moment. And no hand stayed on her. So the people of Sodom, they didn't really know what hit them. You know, all of a sudden, boom, all this fire comes out of the sky and they're gone. You know? And in this case, they are pining away in starvation. Verse 7. Now this idea of the sin of Sodom, that's what God calls Jerusalem. In Revelation, I think it's 8, verse 11, if I look at the cross-reference, or 11, verse 8. That's what he calls Jerusalem. So that's a prophecy that tells us where the one world government's heading. And this tells us, this doesn't make us surprised about the transgender movement and the sodomy movement that's being forced on every nation worldwide. It's not that we give in to it, it's just that we're not surprised with it. And it shows us that the Bible is true again and again. And the world is flat nuts. They're crazy. Just like the Lord said, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Okay, then verse 7. Her Nazarites were purer than snow. They were white, whiter than milk. They were more ruddy in body than rubies. So you can see that ruddy is like a red-brown. It portrays it with rubies. And their polishing was of sapphire. So polishing, there's a common saying there that often you'll say about somebody, well, he's polished. Okay, He knows how to react in certain situations. He's a polished character. So her Nazarites, that's the Nazarite vow back in Numbers. And then he says this, but the contrast is, their visage is blacker than a coal. They are not known in the streets. Their skin cleaveth to their bones. It is withered. It has become like a stick. So from somebody in good health, verse 7, they are now starving to death. Their skin is, you know, just on their bones. And you're hugging them. You're just hugging a skeleton with skin on it. And the reason why, it's been an 18-month siege. 18 months, these people have been starving to death. So what happens? Verse 9, they that be slain with the sword are better than they that be slain with hunger. Okay, yeah, that's common sense. Okay, for these pine away, stricken through for want of the fruits of the field. So it's quite clear, you know, in war, in battle. I knew somebody did a research on their grandfather. It was in World War II. And this individual did quite extensive research on their grandfather and didn't know if he was saved or lost, didn't know anything about him. But what he did know was that a bomb came in and hit him directly, took him out, and everybody else around him was, you know, survived it. But it just took him out. But yet he discovered the testimony of his grandfather was that every man of his company or troop or whatever it testified that this man witnessed to them about Jesus Christ, that he was a saved individual, and that God just said, I'm just going to take him out. He's not even going to know what happened. From 1 minute here, 1 second here, next second he's in heaven. Oh, boy, that was a pretty good trade. Thought I heard a noise, but didn't know what happened. And so God just said, that's better than... you know, having both legs blown off, maybe an arm blown off, and then trying to live the rest of your life like that. And so that's the illustration he's giving, verse 8. Verse 10, how bad is it? The hands of the pitiful women have sodden their own children. Okay, that's already been mentioned once back in chapter 2:20. Mentions that the baby's about a span long, 9 months, preemie. She's starving to death, so in this case, okay, she's cooking a child, dead child, gonna eat it. She's starving to death. Okay, the hands, and it's obviously the adjective is a perfect description, pitiful. Women have sodden their own children. They were their meat in the destruction of the daughter of my people. The Lord hath accomplished his fury. Okay, there's what's happening. God's upset with him. He's mad. And the fury of God will be demonstrated upon Israel during the tribulation time period. He hath poured out his fierce anger. He hath kindled a fire in Zion and hath devoured the foundation thereof. Okay, so historically around 586 B.C., doctrinally, hopefully in the near future. Very near. So verse 12, he said, the kings of the earth and all the inhabitants of the world would not have believed that the adversary and the enemy should have entered into the gates of Jerusalem. So the adversary in one case is Haman. Esther mentioned about Haman that he is the enemy and the adversary. Haman is a type of the Antichrist. Esther is a type of a Jew in the tribulation time period. And so in the end, Haman gets hung or thrown in the lake of fire, the Antichrist. And then the Jew gets their restored to their kingdom. And so that's what happens in the book of Esther. Okay, another passage for the adversary is 1 Peter 5, 8. Be vigilant, be sober, because your adversary, the devil, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. And so the adversary, the enemy, the Antichrist, goes into Jerusalem, okay, and he's going to rule from Jerusalem during that tribulation time period. In Revelation chapter 11, he is going to allow the Gentiles to trodden down the Jewish temple. Verse 13, the sins of her prophets and the iniquity of her priests that have shed the blood of the just in the midst of her. So who's the instigators of this? Who is God telling that's causing these things? And it's the religious crowd, the prophets and priests. The sins of her prophets. This is the forerunning of this judgment. The iniquities of priests, they have shed the blood of the just in the midst of her. Okay, and this is where the church is going after the just, okay, to boot them out. It said, they have wandered as blind men in the streets. They have polluted themselves with blood so that men could not touch their garments. They cried unto them, depart ye, it is unclean. Depart, depart, touch not. When they fled away and wandered, they said, among the heathen, they shall no more sojourn there. Okay, the blood is a sacrifice of people. Okay, this specific thing. Here, this blood of the sacrifice of a Jewish individual in the tribulation, 144,000 Jews, 10% of them or whatever will die in a religious ceremony, and they will be in cahoots with the apostate priest of Israel. Okay, and so that's the driving force of the religion behind it. The anger of the Lord hath divided them. Okay, again, we see God's wrath upon Israel. He will no more regard them. They respected not the persons of the priest. They favored not the elders. Okay, and so once this persecution starts, it doesn't matter. Everybody is going to get part, you know, receive it. He says, as for us, our eyes are yet failed for our vain help. In our watching, we have watched for a nation that could not save us. So the people of Israel are saying they're hoping that a nation would help them. Okay, and so what nation would that be? Who knows? Okay, now America, for years, at least publicly, have been known to be allies with Israel and have been known to defend Israel or at least side with Israel. Okay, and this was pretty well true and still generally is true amongst the common people. But the ones at the top, this is not true. FDR was solidly against Israel. Both Bushes were against Israel behind the scenes. Obama is obviously where he's at on the position. Clinton is obvious where she's at on the position. Okay, and it's the political behind the scenes a lot of times we don't see, but as a Christian influence, our nation generally has been pro-Israel. Okay, and so is this saying that they're looking to America to help save them? Well, they're not going to get help from America because this country is turning. And it's turning fast against Israel. Now, we know the United Nations is solidly against Israel. And we also know that the United States pays for half the fees of the United Nations. And so America could have a stronger influence because you're putting the money in. But we know that the ones at the top don't want that. So verse 17, they're looking for a nation to help them out. It won't be Egypt, it won't be Libya, it won't be Iran, Iraq, Turkey, it won't be none of those. Because they're the ones causing the trouble. It won't be Saudi Arabia. Verse 18, it says, they hunt our steps that we cannot go in our streets. So the Edomites have come into Jerusalem. And historically, it had been the Babylonians, which would be Iraqis today. Okay, but Edom is going to be mentioned when we get down to verse 21. And Edom would be the northern part of Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia is a nation that gets a complete pass from America. And they are more ruthless in their Muslim dealings than Iraq is, than Iran are. Iran, the country of Iran. Saudi Arabia is, you know, absolutely a tyrannical nation for the Muslim faith, but somehow they get a pass. During 9-1-1, when all the planes were grounded, there's one special plane that flew out a bunch of Saudi rich sheiks, and that was authorized by the Bush family. Now, why do they get a pass? Okay, I'd say Bible prophecy. That's where I think it's at. Okay, and obviously it's the money line of the rich oil in Saudi Arabia and everything. But doctrinally, they're coming in. He says, they hunt our steps that we cannot go in our streets. Our end is near, our days are fulfilled, for our end is come. Okay, historically, the end of Israel under Babylon. Doctrinally, this special words, the end, that's a tribulation passage. Our persecutors are swifter than the eagles of the heaven. They pursued us upon the mountains. They laid wait for us in the wilderness. So throw in the helicopters and everything, where they are quicker. Okay, if you're going to throw in the doctrine. He said, the breath of our nostrils, the anointed of the Lord, was taken in their pits, of whom we said, under his shadow we shall live among the heathen. Well, you can say it all you want, but it's not going to happen. 21. We have a paragraph mark, so he's doing a little shift here. He said, rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom, that dwellest in the land of Uz. The cup also shall pass through unto thee. Thou shalt be drunken and shalt make thyself naked. What a weird statement. Okay, now, Edom, the Edomites, okay, that's the descendants of Esau. So you have the descendants of Esau persecuting the descendants of Jacob. And Edom has several chapters in the Bible where God says, I'm wiping you out. I'm done with you. You are forever done. Okay, where some of the Arab community gets punished, like Egypt, but it's not forever. The Edomites is forever. Okay, where Isaiah 34 mentions it. Ezekiel 35, the entire chapter mentions it, that you're done. Malachi chapter 1 mentions it. He said, I hated Esau, and that's the Edomites. Now, that's the location, Uz, that's the location where Job was. This is the southern portion of Judah, way down southern portion, and even the northern part of Saudi Arabia, where today that's called Jordan. Okay, and Jordan is where the rock city is, Petra, and that's one of the historical sites that Jay Ross has on his schedule in Israel, if you're interested in the tour next June. Okay, and that's the place of hiding for the Jewish people of the tribulation. But as far as the Edomites goes, God is going to, he's going to make a political statement and say, I am the Holy One of Israel, and I'm going to wipe out the Edomites. Okay, the end of Obadiah also writes about that. So this shows us that Job has doctrinal information for the tribulation. And then the last verse of chapter 4, the punishment of thine iniquity is accomplished. Okay, so historically, it's done. Babylon, they've gone into captivity. Doctrinally, though, he's jumping several thousand years into the future. Is accomplished. That's the end of the tribulation. O daughter of Zion, he will no more carry thee away into captivity. No more. It's done. You see, now, after Babylon, they got carried into captivity. Media Persia, Greece, even Rome. So this is jumping into the prophetic thing of the tribulation. At the end of the tribulation, When the Lord comes back, Israel will be restored, and he makes this promise, he will no more carry thee away into captivity. He will visit thine iniquity, O daughter of Edom. He goes after them. He will discover thy sins. So he's going to punish Edomites. Israel will be restored, and Edom will be wiped out. Okay, so that will wipe out all that revised Roman Empire of Rome, which is all Muslim territory today. Every bit of it's Muslim territory. And it's Edomites that he goes after, the descendants of Esau. Okay, so that's chapter 4. Any questions or comments are we covered?